Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/redcircle.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at ipvanish.com/audio.
So you've already been in a car accident this morning.
Yep.
Were you driving?
I was, yeah.
Were you hit or did you hit the other person?
I was hit. This Tacoma, and I'm in like a little Malibu, mm-hmm. and this Tacoma just goes past me, hits the Tesla. Luckily, there's a Tesla involved because it gets the full camera footage of it.
So yes.
Pretty clean cut case, but.
Welcome to Austin, as we say. Keep it weird. Keep it weird.
Yeah, it is a little weird. I'm starting to get it. You know, I'm starting to get
it's got a little California vibe to it.
Yeah, that's which what's weird.
Yeah, which is why I think. I mean, you grew up in Northern California.
Yeah,
I'm from the Bay Area. I think.
Yeah, Bay Area. It has a similar vibe to kind of the Santa Cruz a little bit.
I love Santa Cruz,
but yeah, like where's the beach?
Yeah. So the one thing, like, you can't beat the sense of independence or freedom within Texas, no state tax.
Yeah.
Right. I don't even think California's this way, but for vets that are 100% service disabled, total and permanent, zero property tax.
Wow.
So the benefits.
So you double whammy.
The benefits are freaking awesome.
Makes sense then, yeah.
But there's no mountains and there's no beach like California.
Yeah.
You bring up Santa Cruz, man. Every Friday we used to go because we went to high school in San Jose. We'd drive up on 17 through Death Valley to the beach, and we would surf and drink.
Yeah, some good surfing out there.
Oh, dude.
Yeah.
Did you grow up skiing or anything?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Snowboarding.
Snowboarding,
yeah.
In Tahoe,
yeah, Truckee area, you know.
Did you have a pass to Squaw? Or
mostly went to Boreal and Sugar Bowl,
mm-hmm.
mostly.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know what it's all about.
Yeah. Once you get a pass one place, do they have a... like a pass you can pay for that works for multiple?
Yeah, they do. Okay. Yeah. And North Star, and you get all the... That's the best way to do it if you're going up a lot, you know.
Yeah, I don't remember if that was around when I was...
North Star?
It was still there. Well, just a pass bundle. That worked at... Yeah, yeah. Bundle.
Yeah.
I know we had it in Colorado. I went to Boulder for a very short period.
Yeah.
And there was a gold pass that worked at multiple places, and I skied myself right out of...
I didn't do much skiing. I probably would ski now more. I think that would be a little bit less, because you get, you know, when you're snowboarding, you know, it's you're more prone to get injured, I feel like, when you're
on snowboarding.
It depends, I guess, how you snowboard, you know, but
yeah,
I think it's just a little more, you know, leisure. You could be a little more, you know, just, you know, because when you're on your side, you got to be like, but I'd like to just kind of zone out a little more too with the skiing. I think would be fun.
Before we get into Dream, so you grew up in California. What's sort of your path? How did you get into this industry film?
Yeah, I've always been in, like, acting, theater when I was young. So, like, 5 years old, my dad's been a musician, you know, opened up for a lot of bands and was, you know, very, like, talented, has a couple albums. But, it was kind of right before high school. My dad and my brother were working at a reality TV production place, producing like with the guys that made Deadliest Catch and all these other shows that they were creating. Like,
yeah,
with a bunch of extreme, you know, chasing Mavericks was one of the shows that they were working on with the surfers that, you know, surf those 100-foot waves. But we started wanting to do our own projects, and so we were in contact with a lot of people in the industry, a lot of producers, and like, hey, you got to make your own short film, maybe show what you can do, you know. And so me and my
brother, how old are you at this time?
I'm probably 16, you know.
And they say, older brother is film.
Well, my older brother, he's the one with the project, you know. And so he was I think maybe like 21, but he was, you know, already an expert at doing all the color grading, editing for, like, you know, this company, you know. And so we decided to do a short film that had to do with, like, the collapse of society, like power going out. And then that ended up being a really, like, life-changing experience working on that. And then we released that screening in our local area. And
yes.
Just people just loved it and just, like, kind of, like, you know, really started a fire of, like, okay, we can do this. And then you know, fast forward, we started working on a lot of different other projects, developing with some of these, you know, producers that we've now contact with. One of them actually before COVID was about the fires in Santa Rosa. Mm-hmm. It just wiped out 100,000 homeless overnight, right? And that was before Paradise, and then Paradise happened as well. But the idea with that was, you know, we want to make stories that actually are about real people and real issues and have a purpose and have, like, something that's worth spending a year of your time working on. And so we were getting ready to do that, IMAX, you know, cameras, shooting actual fires mixed in with the reenactment, you know, of this devastating fire that took place. And then COVID took place, and, you know, everyone kind of, all projects were kind of at that scale, kind of just put on the wayside. And it was during, like, the first year of COVID that, I think it was August 6th, 2020, I had this dream. And I had seen articles on child, you know, rescues and sting operations with the, you know, U.S. Marshals on the internet. And I was like, oh, that's kind of crazy. Like, I'd see people post about it, but it was never getting, like, breaking news. Like, you know, they rescued 60 kids, you know, out of Atlanta or something like that. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. You know, why wouldn't that be, like, on the front page? You know, like, why are there kids? Why is there 60 kids or, you know, 40 kids that are being rescued? Like, what's going on? So I kind of started looking into that. And then I realized, whoa, this is way bigger number wise than COVID. This is like 800,000 kids in America go missing a year. And then it's documented that 30% of those are being sold in the sex and labor trade.
Say that again.
Yeah.
How many?
800,000 is the estimate. That's just what they can account for. And then you have all the kids that they can't account for, right? And then you're coming through the border and all the ones that aren't even, you know, because a lot of these kids in these situations don't have someone that's going to go, like, hey, my child's missing, you know, because that's kind of a situation that breeds trafficking to begin with, is when the parents don't even care, you know. So it's a huge, huge deal. It's a huge problem. That's yearly, right? So this number is not like a one-time hit. This is continuously taking place. Over a five-year period, you're almost at 5 million kids. You know?
The very volume of the number is, the word that comes to me is disgusting.
Yeah.
And also an indicator that we are better than this.
Yeah.
We are so much better than this.
Yeah. Yeah. No, and when people, if people knew this, right, and they knew what to do, then that would be a game changer, you know, if people knew about it. And it wasn't, you know, because it's interesting, because when you talk to, people that work in government, Homeland Security. My brother, his girlfriend, her dad is Homeland Security. We have other, you know, friends that work in these operations also, with the guys from Sound of Freedom, the Tim Ballard guy, and it's not even a question. Yeah, like, yeah, that's the facts. Those are the statistics, you know. And yet, you know, so many, there is a opposition to that getting out, and it's because of greed. You know, I think that there's any culture, any you know, system of power is going to have corruption in it. Look at anyone through history. If you're going to control, you know, and have that power, it's not going to be through, you know, moral means, you know? And so when people realize, oh, okay, yeah, like, that makes sense. Most people understand that concept, and then they also understand there's evil. And so you just put the two and two together, like, yeah, evil doesn't know any bounds, you know?
The only triumph of evil is for good men to stand by and do nothing.
Yeah.
Right. I think that's Ralph Waldo Emerson. Yeah. I asked so I went to the University of Texas MBA program, and by nature, I think of the location or proximity to, like, Mexico. We had a lot of Mexican nationals that were in our class. Extremely smart, all highly talented, but I asked one, I swear to God, there was actually a couple, husband and wife. He looked like, who's the guy that played Zorro?
Antonio Banderas.
Yes. And she was equally as pretty. Mm-hmm. But I said, hey, why doesn't Mexico just crush the drug trade? And they just laughed and they're like, because every politician profits off it. Not directly, but indirectly.
Right.
And they're like, that will never happen.
Right.
And there's this sense of, well, we're helpless in this situation when we're not.
Right.
I'm not advocating, but maybe I am. There's one thing I respect about how other countries maintain accountability with regards to criminals. I mean, for some countries, if you're caught stealing, you know what they do?
Yeah. They'll cut you, kill you, or cut your hand off.
Cut your hand off. When you start to enact accountability like that, you're disincentivizing behaviors and people behavior. I'll give you an example. This looting, mm-hmm. which a lot of people have come out against it, who, you know, have probably taken some criticism. And then you got the mayor of Chicago saying, hey, we can't call a bunch of kids rioting in the streets, looters and things like that. Yeah. No, we can. And
protesters.
And protesters. It takes one just company of cops to come in and clean house.
Yeah.
And that means heads would be cracked, but people will think twice about doing it again.
Right. And as it is right now, it's the reverse, right? If you do something, you're going to face the consequence, you know? And that's really how it's set up right now. If you take the matters into your own hands, you know, that's something our film kind of grapples with as well, is what do you do, right? What does that look like when the system is set up for this kind of stuff to flourish, to where it's really, you know, because in America, it's just really hard to make impact with this issue because of all of the legal implications, and then restoring kids after is very difficult with you know, the child services systems, and it's very hard to get a lot of work done, especially in America, whereas in other countries, you know, even kids getting rescued from other countries, a lot of them have to stay there and they have to figure out ways to raise them there, because getting them put into a place where they're, you know what I mean, in a system here is, and that's also very difficult because in those other countries, it really is kind of also cultural sometimes, where it's like, it's so hard to create a different environment for that kid once they've been rescued out of it. You literally have to have like a whole new ecosystem environment to put them into, because they'll just fall right back into that same. You rescue them and then you just leave them there. They'll be right back in the same situation. And so, yeah, it's a tough, and then when people don't even realize how bad this is in America, because it's easy, you know, that movie Sound of Freedom came out, mm-hmm. and a lot of people run the risk of just thinking, oh man, that's so terrible. But, you know, a lot of bad stuff happens in third world countries. And then when you look at the numbers, you look at how bad it is here, and it's just, you know.
No, that, it can never happen.
It can never happen here. Right, yeah. I mean, I just was on the way, when I was driving, I just saw Amber Alert, you know, right on the freeway there, you know.
In the Fort Worth area, mm-hmm. I believe.
Yeah.
A 2-year-old by a 30-year-old woman.
Yeah.
I remember I was walking this morning when it went off. This had to be a profound dream.
Yeah.
I mean, it was were maybe a little plant-based medicine involved in this dream? No. But I mean, just sort of detail this dream for me. I mean, the fact that it would throw you into action.
Yeah. Well, I just remember waking up from this dream August 6, 2020, and I had this, the dream was essentially I was standing at the gate of this industrial fenced, you know, gated warehouse on this desolate kind of dusty road. And there was train tracks that ran on one side of the road and then the warehouse. And I just looked into these blacked out windows, and this looked like a commercial building. And I just felt like there was something more nefarious going on than meets the eye. And I sensed like that there was like a cry of children in there. And then this man pulls up in a vehicle up to this security pad. He's like, oh, what are you doing here? And he starts to kind of question me and starts to, you know, say, you know, this is appointment only, you know, we shut the place down, you know, he shouldn't be here. And then as he starts coming towards me to pretty much, in my mind, to kill me, I wake up and I just like, it was the middle of the night. I just remember, you know, sometimes you have these moments where it's like, don't ignore this, you know? And I felt really strongly like I couldn't shake it. And I was like, whoa, I just felt like it was like, it was a real place. And so I actually, crazy enough, I went looking for this particular, because it was so vivid, I went looking for this particular location, driving around the outskirts of my hometown and industrial areas, and I never ended up finding it, but as I was out there driving, I just thought the whole idea for the film kind of downloaded into me, and I just thought, man, that would be an amazing, crazy story. And partially because, you know, I had heard some things like this take place. I had heard a story of a couple that had nothing to do with rescue operations, but they're just driving by a freeway in a particular location. They just sensed, I think there's something weird going. They actually went in and just called a suspicious tip, and they ended up rescuing kids out of this location. And so that was kind of implanted in my mind. I was like, okay, maybe this is something that actually, you know, might lead to something. I could be on the news or something like that. Or, but no, really just the story just ended up developing out of that. And then it was a short story. And then that short story just expanded into a full-length script on its own, really. It was the easiest, you know, because I've written probably 10 scripts. A bunch of different, you know, actually prior to this, we were working on a couple different projects that we were, you know, have stoking in the fire. And when this came through, I just, I felt, man, I gotta make this. I see this one through. And I can't focus on anything else until I get this done, because it just, everything else started to feel like a movie. And this started to feel like a mission. And I can't just focus on another, you know, script about a, you know, truck driver getting kidnapped by a prisoner and going on a robbery. You know, I just had to focus on this issue. And then when I dived into it, I saw the numbers, I saw the stories, I saw how bad it was. I was like, man, this, where is the coverage on this? I could do something about this. You know, I can bring this to light in a way that I felt that many people won't want to watch a story about trafficking, which is what they were telling us at the time. Even in producing it, and we had, you know, Hollywood traditional financing set up with it, a lot of people were telling us, no one wants to see a movie about that. We got Sound of Freedom sitting on the shelf, you know. This isn't good for marketing. It's not a good look, pretty much, is what everyone thought prior to this other film.
So who was the first person you called after the dream? Your brother?
Yeah, I texted my brother, I think. I ended up texting him. I was like, I didn't even tell him about a dream. I just said, there's a child trafficking ring. We got to go find it. And then, you know, I told some friends, and then it kind of, yeah, it just kind of started to build. And then other people were like, man, this is, so essentially what I told people was, I'm going to make a film about a guy that has a dream, and then it leads him and his friends on a night quest to uncover a child trafficking ring in their small town. And they're like, well, that sounds like pretty cool idea, you know, kind of like a military operation thing, but it's with vigilante type thing. And then got some really amazing, even as a short, we got some really amazing talent on board to want to do it. And then from there, I'm a person that really flows from the gut and mm-hmm. how I go about things. And I just felt, like instead of just making it as a short, I felt that gut thing, like, no, let's make it. And within a couple of weeks, I turned it into a feature. And then I was on, you know, calls with Academy Award-winning actors, and building this thing, you know. But the way I had written it wasn't with that at the forefront with trafficking. I'd really written it as more like a thriller, and you, the mystery. Mm-hmm. You don't really find out what this whole thing is until kind of the end. And so a lot of people, you know, most people in Hollywood don't actually read the full script anyways. Mm-hmm. They're like, okay, this guy's attached. Okay, well, you know, we'll make it. And especially when they found out like what my mission was with wanting to do this, you know, people started to kind of shy away from, initially there was a lot of interest, and there was, you know, financing brought around it, and then people started having conversations without us on this, and like, oh, you know, it's going to be kind of, you're going to have a hard time with this one. And then mysteriously, everyone kind of just backed away slowly. And it was very interesting because we did have another actor who was a Golden Globe winning, just recent Golden Globe best actor for a series. And he's like, man, you got it. This is amazing. This is like, you got to move heaven and earth to get this done. Like, this needs to be told. Like, you could sell this right now to, like, the director of Dune, you know. But, of course, then they'll have it and you won't have, you know. Creative. I think you need to make that. You got to figure out a way to make this. And he says, I'll send it to my agency and I'll let them know how I, and then when that took place, there wasn't Oh, yeah. It was the opposite. Like, they called us up, and it was very much the opposite. It was, like, pretty much, like, a reprimand almost. It was weird. It was a very weird situation.
So I'm having trouble understanding this. And I heard one of your earlier interviews that I found on through Google. Yeah. What is the uncomfortable, hesitant nature around sex trafficking and child trafficking?
Yeah.
What it's as if it's making a lot of people nervous.
Yeah, you know, I used to kind of, I could almost kind of relate with this everyday person, because prior to the stream, I was like, man, that's, you know, that sucks, but I don't really want to think about that, you know? And then when I had this dream, I felt the feeling I had in my, you know, in the darkness of the night. I felt, whoa, what was this? What is this? Whoa, what is this like for a kid at night? Like, you've been taken away from your, if you did have a good family, you've been taken away. That nightmare didn't end. You didn't get rescued 30 minutes later. This is now your life is a nightmare. Every day, your entire existence is a nightmare. There is no such thing as a good night of sleep. There's no such thing as peace. And I started to feel, whoa, if I was that kid, man, I would just hope and pray someone would have the selflessness to rescue me, to hunt me down. And then that was just call that I'd felt. And so without having some sort of, it's amazing what people will turn their eyes to until it's one of their own, you know? Mm-hmm. And so until it hits you personally, it's very like, oh, that's kind of a weird, you know, not weird, but that's kind of like, it's like, it's almost like hearing about, I guess it could be kind of similar to, you know, people's stories when it comes to like war stories, right? Like a lot of people just don't want to deal with that trauma and that.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And so people are like, oh, that's terrible, but they don't want to contemplate it or empathize for it in a deeper way, because it's too difficult. It requires too much emotional. It's exhausting, really. And if you don't have anything to offer for it, then you're just, you know, essentially torturing yourself, right? You know, like, leave that for someone else to deal with. And that just doesn't fix issues. You know, I don't think that's why we're here at all. You know, if most people kind of just live their life for themselves, they live to be as comfortable as possible, and, you know, like just to avoid.
They like to live life with their head buried.
Yeah. Enjoy your life, you know. Live your best life today, you know. And there's nothing wrong with going on vacation and having a good time, but when that, I don't think that is why we're here. I don't think that is why we're on this planet, is just to simply, you know, live for ourselves. I think that this is a place of rescue, and I think that's what we're all called to in some form or another, is to rescue those from suffering, from, you know. And I'm a person of faith. I'm a Christian myself, and that happened when I was around like 19. And the biggest thing that changed in me when that took place was, you know, there's a verse where it says, if you do this unto others, you know, if you you know, when you give water to this person, or you give, you know, you're doing it to me, right? When did I give water to you? When did I give, you know? And when you did it unto others, you were doing it to me. And when you didn't do it unto others, you didn't do it for me. And so I started to see people as image bearers of the Creator, you know? And when you look at people with value, like, I was like, whoa, like, I'm actually seeing people now, the homeless person on the street, the person that, you know, is suffering. And you start to realize when you step out and you do that, oh, wow, this feels right. This feels like why we're here. You know, there's something that clicks. I get chills, you know, when you step out and you do something like that. And it could be as simple as, you know, giving. It could be as simple as, you know, just being there for someone. It's usually within hand's reach, whatever it is that you need to do or you can do, especially with this issue. If people have the foresight and the awareness to even just pay attention to the surroundings. I was just talking with a young lady. She was trafficked her whole life until she was 20. And for 4 years, she was in the Houston area, you know, Astrodome. And no one had the foresight as a little girl to pick up on those cues, those social cues and the awareness. And she was around, she would say hundreds of thousands of people for that four-year period before she was then trafficked out of the country as a little kid until she was 20. And that's a big thing right there, is just having the awareness, having the situational awareness, you know, and that's for, I guess that goes for, you probably have situational awareness anywhere you go, right?
It's degraded heavily.
Yeah.
Since you know, I'm 5 years removed.
Right.
But it had to because it was also crushing my bandwidth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel you. Yeah. That's probably true. Yeah. Yeah.
There's a couple things I want to unpack there. Well, one, Houston is one of the largest areas for, and the only reason I know that is because Nick McKinley, who founded a Deliver Fund.
I saw that.
And one of his lead guys, a guy named Sal, who was a Navy vet, works the Houston area. Good people approaching or fighting it from a different means to deny space, which is beautiful. It's like the CIA.
Yeah.
The whole purpose of the CIA is to win silent wars so that we never have to deploy those young 18-year-old men and women. It's crazy what they do. It is. And they've been kneecapped a bit. There is, and I just always have faith in man, and I don't want to lose that. I always have faith that people are going to do the right thing. But as I grow older and hopefully wiser, I've come to realize that the 99% and the 1% has nothing to do with wealth. The 1% is unique in that they will step up. We said, the only necessary thing for the evil of triumph of evil is for good men to stand by and do nothing.
Yeah.
But that goes to Isaiah 6:8.
Mm.
And I heard the voice of the Lord say, "Who shall I send?
Yeah.
And whom will go for send us?" Me. And I said, "Here am I. Send me."
Yeah.
And the reason the Lord had to ask that is that a very small minority are the only ones that will demonstrate the moral courage to step up.
It's David, man.
Regardless of the consequences, and do something about it. And if that small minority can inspire just one or two to join their ranks, it continues to grow until it picks up momentum. Mm. But I walked on, you know, this had to be about a year ago now. We were in, what's the mall over here? Barton Creek. Barton Springs? Barton Creek Mall. Mm. And my wife and I come around the corner, and there's this crowd, and they're all watching something. And so I move through the crowd, and these two guys are just, like, on the ground, like, in fisticuffs. And everyone's watching. Everyone has their phone out. And I look at my wife, and I just walk up to the two of them, and I yell, "Hey!" And they both look up. And I'm like, are we good here? And the guys stopped. They separated and say, "Hey guys, go your separate ways. It's over. It's done." But not a single person. There had to be a crowd of probably 30, 40 people stepped in to grab the guys and pull them apart.
Yeah.
Where's the courage? Yeah. Where's the moral courage to do what's right?
Yeah.
But it's also, you
takes faith.
It takes faith, but it is frustrating. I know a lot of good guys that if the U.S. government contracted them coming out of the military and gave them carte blanche with law enforcement embedded with them, it would become a more personal balanced mission than going overseas during the global war on terrorism. This one would hit home.
Yeah.
And they would be relentless. But again, the American public, if there was one raid where there was some collateral damage, oh God, it becomes a frontline pages and then the weak blame those that are actually in the arena, the arena, which is above you. But you know, there's also a concept called, and it was popularized, I think, by a guy named Lieutenant Colonel Dave Grossman, who wrote On Combat and On Killing. He talked about sheepdog and sheep.
Mm, yeah.
And that the sheep gravitate towards the sheepdog when danger is close or they are needed. Mm. But the second they are not, the sheepdogs are shunned by the sheep. And I did start to see that. So I remember in 98 when I was in the Marines, U.S. confidence in the military was low. It was the Clinton administration, and we were viewed as degenerates, had no capability outside of the military to do anything rewarding towards civilization. And society looked down as a whole. Post 9/11, people are like, "We love you guys." Yeah. And I'm like, "Hey, yeah, okay. I remember the last 3 years. Like, I see it for what it is, and I'm seeing it again." Is the public wants nothing to do with the military. And lo and behold, what's low again? the populace's confidence in the U.S. military, which is misplaced or confused with their lack of confidence in the administration. But walk me through, where's the film now? What stages are you guys in?
Yeah, so we did shoot a very powerful concept trailer that just went viral in the last couple weeks on the internet. And a lot of people are like, oh, you know, where can I watch it? Where is it? But it hasn't been, you know, finished yet. So that's the kind of the process. I mean, what we're trying to do right now really flies in the face of not only the industry's agenda, but in the way that they get things done, which is usually all decided by a couple guys, you know, in a boardroom or, you know, a guy in a suit with a bunch
of
money.
How's that working out for him right now with the strike?
And so, you know, what we're doing right now is we're grassroots kind of campaigning and raising so that we can actually finish this and then have the profit control at the box office to benefit these organizations that we're in association partnership with.
Good on you.
Yeah.
Good on you.
And not only that, but, you know, this film that just came out really blew the lid off of what everyone else was saying in opposition to our mission. Our film's very different. It's very much centered in kind of like a younger audience almost, but it relates with both. And it is just conceptually, tonally, it's a completely different film with a very similar mission. But with that film coming out, it opened a lot of people's minds and put it at the forefront of people's minds. And what we plan to do is have at the end of the film, you know, because when Top Gun came out in the 80s, that skyrocketed the enlistment, you know, in the Navy. And
it did.
And when Backdraft came out, that same thing with firefighting. But those career paths, you know, have a very clear layout, you know, recruiters. And it's very much a situation you put yourself into, and a system kind of helps you get into that. When it comes to this, I talk to people that are really moved after Sound of Freedom, really moved, wanting to, what do I do? People don't know how to get involved. And at the end, the film doesn't show you where to give or where to go. That's something we want to have very clearly stated at the end, is these are the organizations that are having the most impact and effect in these different areas. Here's how you can give. And then these are the ways that you can actually get involved if you want to join that fight in a real way, in person, you know. And then working it out with these particular organizations, one of them's Answer International right out of Burleson, and they've rescued 10,000 kids and raised 10,000 kids.
Which is a drop in the bucket.
Yeah, it's a drop in the bucket.
But it's they're doing something.
It is, you know. Well, and in comparison to a lot of organizations, that's a big number. I mean,
huge.
So
we just need more organizations.
We need more. Yeah, we need. I mean, you look at how many trillions do they throw at COVID? You know, and this
don't
issue.
Don't get me started there on government spending. Do you have a crowdfunding site?
Yeah.
Can we pull up the crowd and let's leave it up?
Yeah.
If you could walk Will on.
Yeah, dreamfilm.us is
dreamfilm.us.
Yeah, that's the site. Pretty simple.
And we'll take a look at that. Of course, we're going to drop it in all the transcripts and the articles.
Yeah.
How close are you?
We're kind of just at the start of the raise right now. Mm-hmm. But you know, I have a lot of faith and a lot of confidence that we're going to have this shot and done by the end of the year.
Sound of Freedom had to do something very similar, right? Yeah. They had to raise money.
Yeah.
And so the industry is just.
Oh, they're getting flipped upside down, you know. So
does this impact you after this, after you do this, will this impact your, I don't want to say credibility, but will this impact your career in the industry? Are you, I'm assuming you know the implications that you're going to piss off a lot of people. You already probably have.
Certainly. So, it definitely will. I guess the difference is so many people have already, you know, sitting on their laurels already, and have their career set up, so they got something to lose, you know. And I don't have anything to lose, so, you know, this could be, you know, potentially the last film we do, but it's the mission at hand right now, and whatever it takes to get it done is what I'm, you know, called to do. And so, I have faith that obviously it'll but yeah, I mean, the industry in itself, I don't think we need that anymore, to be honest. Especially with what they're doing with Sound of Freedom and the project that came out right prior to that. I mean, people in the industry were calling up this particular studio that they released, Angel Studios, when this other film came out earlier this year, and they said, how did you get in the top three box office this weekend? You know, how much money did you spend on P&A? And they said, we spent $1 million. Like, we've never.
Which is nothing.
Yeah, we've never, ever gotten in the top three of the weekend box office spending less than $10 million, you know? And this is a film also made by a first-time filmmaker that made $12 million off of the budget of the film. Was like $200,000. It made $12 million, like, in a weekend. And so and that's not just that particular studio. This is a way kind of people are, you know, because they're not telling the stories that people want to see, you know? And so people, you know, I think have had enough, and people want to, like, people are willing, like, hey, I'll put some, you know, investment or some money in if we're going to start telling stories that we actually want to watch on screen.
Not like Barbie.
Yeah.
I was forced to go see that, and let me just say, it was awful. It was so bad. I mean, the thing about movies, as long as I got my, like, popcorn and my Diet Coke, I'm good.
Well,
pay more attention to that.
We'll cut that part just in case Ryan Gosling wants to come.
Oh, hey, I'm a big Ryan Gosling fan. Me too. I get it. I love we all have bad projects. Oh, that looks...
you go down and you can also watch
that. Beautifully done.
Yeah. Yeah, and the link on there, there's a message on there, there's some... external links, but yeah, and so essentially we are, you know, starting this raise, and people can. That's the great part about it, is if you believe in it, you can help us build it, you know, and be proud of being part of a project that's not only something you get to see, but it's something you get to, you know, be a real supporter of.
What beautiful videography!
Yeah, appreciate that.
And so the premise is.
The premise is this young man has a little sister, and she is taken. She goes missing at a local small grounds motorcycle event. And 3 years later, she's still never to be found. And so he ends up having this dream that leads him and his, you know, blue collar kind of friends into a mission to uncover a child trafficking ring in their small town.
And they find the building.
Yeah.
It goes on. This is great. That is, I'm excited for you. I'm excited to watch this process. You're doing it right. So if people go directly
to
dreamfilm.us, they can make a donation as well.
Yeah.
Is it considered a donation? What is it considered?
It's considered giving now. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Same thing.
So, yeah.
All right. Well, I will go and I will give as much as I can for right the time. Does the sound? Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, so one other interesting little piece is actually a character from the film. That not directly in contact, but this man's ministry, they've rescued 10,000 kids. One of their little girls was rescued 10 months ago, and she wouldn't speak, was mute, would not talk to anyone. And she, he actually had a dream that he went down and he met this little girl. That's part of their operation. And when he met her, that she would speak. And he left his anniversary trip to go see if this would take place. And it took place exactly like his dream. And this girl ended up becoming the face for their organization for the last 7 months. And we got in contact with him about 4 weeks ago, miraculously. My brother somehow, and it was right at the same time, this little girl, they've never had it happen with 10,000. She was re-trafficked. And the people caring for her had their heads blown off. He showed us the pictures, like blood. And there was even a Bible there. It was like blood all over the Bible. And... so we actually got to hook him up with some of Tim Tebow's guys, special ops guys, and be on kind of the behind the scenes strategizing on how they're going to figure out how to re-rescue and locate where she's at. And it's amazing. It's like Mission Impossible stuff, the kind of technology they have to try to track this stuff down. They ended up tracking her down, and it wasn't the cartel that they were worried about. It was this different cartel that was a little more. And so they ended up re-rescuing her on her 10th birthday like a week and a half ago. And this was a girl that had inspired a character towards the end of our film, you know, a year ago. And then we get to be a part of something that's never taken place, a re-trafficking and then a re-rescue. And the fact that we got in touch with him right as this was taking place was just, it was insane. And, but it's just kind of been a process like that all along in these last couple months. And so I'm 100% confident that we're on the right track and we're gonna see this thing through to the end.
The fact that the cartels still exist.
Yeah.
it just totally eliminate cartels. Yeah. Why? Because it's the right thing to do.
Yeah.
They drugs, trafficking, this is not a hard decision to make.
No.
And if it defies Mexico's sovereignty, oh well.
Yeah.
Oh well. You let the problem perpetuate.
Yeah.
So you are complicit.
There's consequences
in everything that goes forward. And you know what? Mexico would keep their mouth shut.
Yeah, that's my opinion. When it comes to a kid, I don't think there's any question about that at all.
No, I remember when, what was the guy, the name of the militant leader in Africa? It was like Kony, I believe. And I remember they took 500 schoolgirls hostage. You remember this in Africa?
I think I recall Kony, yeah.
And of course, we tried to, through foreign internal defense, and I said by, with, and through is a term in the military, meaning we do it through the local forces there, so we can't exactly conduct the raids.
Right.
But the fact that we just didn't deploy special operations to rescue those little girls as quickly as possible, it was. I remember when this happened. I was still active duty. We're like, just send us.
Yeah.
Like we'll you don't need to tell us the purpose or the why behind this.
Yeah.
We've got daughters.
Yeah.
We get it.
It's pretty simple and straightforward. Yeah.
And we can't be everywhere and everyone's first responders, but for some things, when it comes to kids,
especially in the U.S., when people realize that our film focuses in the U.S., when you feel this daughter as your own, right? It's something that hits you a little differently than if it's happening in a different country. For when it comes to Americans, they start to realize, oh, this is happening right here, and it is happening within a couple. The statistics show that within a couple mile radius, you got someone that's a perpetrator, predator. And if you understand the big market industry behind this, I mean, you wouldn't be surprised if there's a drug addict. So why are we surprised that there's a pedophile or, a trafficker within such a amount of time when this is just as lucrative now, and if not becoming more lucrative? It's the same evil behind all of it, So it is something that we really want to focus and pull those people's heartstrings. Show them, when you touch someone's heart in that way first, it becomes an immediate, and then giving them, here's what you do, not go buy another ticket, but here's what you do, here's how you can get involved right now, and make an impact right now, and while you're in the theater,
I know with Nick McKinley, Nick is just extremely intelligent, very articulate, so he would say it better than I, but basically to paraphrase, that social media has just become it's been weaponized for human traffickers.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it is their number one source.
It's the number one thing. Yeah.
Responsibility. Yeah. And responsibility of the parents to make sure, in a sense, you're infringing on your kid's First Amendment rights to make sure you know what they're
saying. That's the world they're living in. It's culture is literally moved by story. It's moved by media. It's moved by, and so that's my superpower. The biggest thing I could lend to that issue is my strength, which is storytelling. And so everyone has their calling in this fight. With you, you might want to join a operation of some sort. But everyone has something they could lend to this fight.
You don't want me and my guys doing those raids, because I can tell you the outcome. And I'm not trying to play the tough guy. I'm tired of tough guys. Yeah. Usually the tough guys were the biggest cowards on the battlefield. Yeah. It's just I know my guys, and the way I described my guys, actually, I've taken this to it from a former commanding officer, is like the most empathetic, loving fathers, sons, brothers, husbands. But when they dial that empathy switch down, there is just a blackness that comes over them. Mm. And it is not a sight to see.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I feel you there. It's needed. In some situations,
it is needed. Where sometimes you got to let things get darker before you take those measures. And I don't want to play the tough guy, and I'm not some right wing,
nut job.
It's when, again, what our problem with, and this is in my humble opinion from the perspective and experiences of my life, is this country has lost all means of accountability.
Yeah.
And it starts with our leaders if something went wrong, and I know we
anything
we just,
goes.
I don't want to say we celebrated. We honored the second anniversary of the withdrawal from Afghanistan. And people try to put that on Biden. No, there was two decades of decisions that led up to that. He was the man that had to deal with a bad circumstance. where there are some very bad decisions on his part, unequivocally. And had he just stepped up and say, hey, listen, I'm the president, I'm the commander in chief, the buck stops with me. We lost 13 soldiers and this is on me. And here's what I'm going to do about it. Mm-hmm. And initiated a review, a very thorough review, rather than taking 1 year to publish. It was actually a year and like a half to publish a 12-page executive summary or after action review from the White House on the withdrawal. Like 12 pages. Couldn't even get 13 pages for the 13 dead. This just makes me sick. Yeah.
I think the only thing to that, you know, as we as people can do in our own lives is what's right in front of us, you know, because, you know, I don't know if we're going to eradicate this issue of a $150 billion industry, you know, but one more kid, one more life, what, you know, what impact you make even in, you know, where you're at and in just your own, you know, vicinity is huge. And, you know, at the end, you know, everyone's going to be held accountable. And I believe that, you know, people will face the consequences if they choose to cower away from this conversation. Everyone will definitely be, at the end of the day, I think, will be judged accordingly and justice will prevail. But, we're not, I don't think that we need to do everything, you know, not everything's on one person, you know, but even knowing that, okay, yeah, power's corrupt, our country, you know, absolutely, corruption's everywhere, okay? Yeah. And I think that that's just a biblical tale in and of itself, you know. But what we do that's is little becomes very big when we do it together, you know.
One child at a time.
Yeah.
It's, you know, the exponential effect of when people just impact those around you. Yeah. And then those people go on to impact the people around them. That's all we're asking.
Yeah. Amen.
Amen. Well, Ben, I thank you for coming to Austin. I commend you for what we're doing. This is, I haven't done enough. Not even close. That's an understatement. I've done nothing but to help tell the story. And the power of storytelling is everything. There should be a college degree in storytelling. Yeah. Yeah. I'm not talking about history.
Yeah.
But we're going to push out this website, dreamfilm.us.
Yeah.
Give. Just give, guys. I'm going to go make a donation, not a donation, but I'm going to go give as much as I can because I believe in what you're doing and the story needs to be told. And part of this is educating people.
Yeah.
And not even educating. They do know it's a thing.
Yeah.
Is getting them to wake up and realize that if you're not part of the solution, you're part of the problem.
Right.
Okay. Amen. Where else can people find you?
Yeah, Instagram, you know.
Instagram.
Ben Pauling on Instagram. Dream Movie Official, like if all the film. I think that's it right now. Dude.
Powerful. Keep doing what you're doing, brother.
Thank you, bro.
Thank you for following us. Again, for the listeners, please go to Spotify, Apple, wherever you listen to this podcast, or YouTube, which we post all the videos at Men's Journal. Leave comments, leave reviews, like, dislike. That's how we improve. We actually do read them. Again, Ben, thanks for joining us.
You're a real one, man. All right. Glad to be here.
Thank you, brother.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home, and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at ipvanish.com/audio.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is making it easy to get vaccinated. Care is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. Care is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Visit kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.